Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and I'm back after a two-month break. I first want to thank Your Call senior producer Malihe Razazan for keeping the show running smoothly while I was gone. In addition to the day-to-day operations, she trained two new producers, which is a lot of work. She put in so much extra work over the past 2 months and deserves a very long vacation. Huge, huge thanks, Malihe. I also want to thank Angie Coiro and Ethan Elkind for doing a great job hosting the show and for being so flexible. They will continue filling in as I ease back. And thanks to Andrew Stelzer for filling in as a producer. So I took the past 2 months off to care for my dad and process his loss. My dad was diagnosed with a rare aggressive form of cancer in May. I actually did a few shows about cancer after his diagnosis. The treatments initially worked, but unfortunately, the cancer quickly returned, and he passed on January 4th after 5 weeks on. It was a devastating journey, but there was so much love and laughter in the house until the very end. It has felt really odd to talk about my dad in such a generic way, so I just want to share a bit about him before we start today's show. My dad's name was Dan. Sorry, I was trying. I really did not want this to happen, but you know what? We're all human. And this either has happened or will happen to all of us. Excuse me. My dad was only 74 and was full of life. I was lucky to have had such a fun, loving dad. I want to share a little bit more about him because I think it's so important to remember those we lost, and I feel so grateful to have this platform to do this. My dad had a rewarding career in sheet metal, and after he retired, he turned his passion for woodworking into a small business. He often donated items to local organizations and community fundraisers, and he took so much pride in his amazing work and found great joy in seeing the happiness his creations brought to others. He absolutely loved sports and was so lucky to find a passion later in life by volunteering with the Miracle League North Bay. He served as a board member and a coach, helping children with disabilities enjoy organized baseball. He loved making personalized coat racks for the players and constantly talked about how much the Miracle League enriched his life. My dad also volunteered with Una Vida, delivering food to families in need throughout Petaluma. He loved hosting parties at his house, especially when the Warriors or the Giants or the 49ers were on, and he had more friends than anyone I know. During the last 5 weeks of his life, people were actually passing each other in the hallway, and I had to manage his visits because there were so many. As you can tell, this process has really been a journey, and this is all new to me. We have all experienced loss or will experience loss, and yet I don't think we talk about it enough. So over the next couple of days, we're going to talk about grief. A few weeks after I lost my dad, I went to the grief section of Book Passage in Corte Madera, and I picked up Finding Meaning, The Sixth Stage of Grief by David Kessler, one of the world's foremost experts on grief. And David writes that despite his knowledge on grief, spending so much time with people dealing with what I'm dealing with, he writes about how his world was upended by the sudden death of his 21-year-old son, David. David Kessler shares so many words of wisdom in his book, and this one is one of my favorites. He writes, "Grief is extremely powerful. It is easy to get stuck in your pain and remain bitter, angry, or depressed. Grief grabs your heart and doesn't seem to let go. But if you can manage to find meaning in even the most senseless loss, you can do more than get unstuck. When circumstances are at their worst, you can find your best. You can keep growing and finding ways to live a good and someday even a joyous life, one enriched by the lessons and love of the person who died." Throughout his career, David Kessler has worked with thousands of people on the edge of life and death and has written 6 books on grief and loss, including 2 in collaboration with renowned psychiatrist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who originated the theory of the 5 stages of grief. Inspired by his own experiences with loss, David was moved to recognize a 6th stage in the grieving process, meaning, and that's the subject of his most recent book, Finding Meaning. David Kessler regularly teaches counselors and medical professionals about dealing with grief and loss. He facilitates talks and workshops. In fact, today at 3 p.m., what timing, he's going to be conducting a free live online conversation about grieving a parent. And you can find information on our website, kalw.org, click news, and then your call. David Kessler's work has touched so many lives, including mine, and I'm so grateful to have him on today's show. Hi, David. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi there. I'm so glad to be with you, and I'm sorry to be with you around the loss of your sweet father. And I, you know, one of the things I always say to people off the bat is I say, tell me their first name. And I love that you told us his first name, because they're not a loss. They're these amazing people that walk the earth.
Right.
And so that's why I love to use their name and talk about them that way.
It's so interesting you say that, because I feel like over the past 2 weeks, I have been saying, I lost my dad. And then something hit me and I thought, wait a minute, my dad was just such an amazing human being. And it has helped so much to say his name was Dan, and he loved heavy metal and he loved sports and he was so creative. And now I'm actually carrying around his photo and showing people his photo. And David, I noticed that on the back of your book, you talk about your son. And I mean, I read your book, but I thought, oh, David's son, his name was David. I want to include his son's name in the introduction. I just think it's so important.
Yeah, it is. You know, they deserve to be fully remembered. And I think it's also interesting your opening, you know, you, like all of us, apologize for emotions.
Right.
And I remind people, we're apologizing for love. And, you know, your tears, your being choked up, are evidence of your love. And it's interesting. Look, it's not like, why is Rose doing that? I mean, we all do that because we have a world that wants to stuff tissues in our face and go stop crying. And yet, that's how we experience grief, is through many time tears.
Also, just having this platform, David, we talk about politics, social issues, health, the environment, arts, a wide range of issues. And I thought it wouldn't seem authentic to come back and just act like I've been on a vacation and talk about whatever I would talk about after a vacation. And I think it's just, we've all either gone through this or we will go through it. And when I went to the bookstore, Book Passage, they had so many amazing books about grief. And doing research online, there's so much out there. But I feel in the wider conversation in our day-to-day lives, at least I don't hear much about grief. When you step out of the world that you're in, focusing on grief so much, do you hear much about it in your everyday life?
Yeah, I think your perception is accurate. And not every bookstore is as amazing as the one you are in and utilize. You know, it's interesting. I travel a lot. Whenever I'm on a plane, I promise you, whether it's a flight attendant, the person next to me, when we all make the small talk of what do, I know when I tell people what I'm to, I'm going to hear a lot about someone who died. Mm-hmm. And people are hungry to talk about it, but we don't know how. And the interesting thing, going back to the bookstore, is I can't tell you how over the years I have tried to get my books into airport bookstores. And when I have met with the reps, they always say, No, people are going on vacation. We don't want to depress them. And I'm like, how many people are flying to deathbeds and funerals? Like, it's the perfect place to have a book on grief, but it comes from that. Oh, let's not depress people with this thing, as you say, it's going to happen to all of us. And I actually talk about, I've been looking at the statistics for a number of years, and the death rate stands at 100%.
Right.
100%. I mean, yes, we're going to deal with politics at times. We're going to deal with arts at times, but all of us are going to deal with this topic, and we run from it.
David, why do you think we don't spend more time on grief? I went to a birthday party on Saturday night, and I just put myself in the corner of the kitchen. I was really in the mood for dancing. It's just a weird thoughts and feelings. Do you want to dance? Yes, but no. And so I was back in the kitchen and everyone, but it was so beautiful. Everyone came back and said, "How are you?" So many of my friends, I'm fairly close with some of these people, they started sharing their own stories. And I thought, how did I not know this? That this friend actually lost both of her parents in her early 30s. It's not like I see these people on a regular basis, but I thought such a monumental thing happened to this friend, and yet I did not even know about this until I shared my story. Why is that happening?
And that is so common that grief is such an isolating experience. And I don't think we realize our friends and family sometimes do the isolating without knowing it. But whether it's the death of a parent, you feel like you're the only one. Then, as you say, you're in the kitchen and start chatting, and people come in and they make a disclosure to you like they're sharing a secret. And it also happens with people who have had a sibling die. People have friends for years and they didn't realize they had a sibling die until your sibling dies, or a child dies, or someone dies by suicide or addiction. And it's true with miscarriage, we all carry these losses by ourselves until someone joins the club, and then we know it's safe to talk to them. And it's interesting, grief can sometimes become a time when your family and friends feel like strangers, and strangers can become family and friends. I have online grief groups. I have 26 grief groups online from all over the people all over the world. And they gather because their families and friends unknowingly have told them to cheer up, move on, get over it before they were ready.
Oh, wow.
Or don't ask why, or why do you keep dwelling on it? And yet, here's the thing, Rose, that people don't realize, and you found out and you saw it in the kitchen. Grief must be witnessed. We need our grief reflected, our pain, our love reflected in the eyes of another person. And it's fascinating. Research around grief and trauma are showing us that outside events, situations, people dying, horrible things happening, cause our grief and our trauma. And the only thing that really ultimately heals it is other people, being around other people who can talk about it. So I applaud what you are doing today. You are helping us not have a grief illiterate world.
Well, thank you. And something you said really hit me hard. In the grief groups that you're taking part in, you're hearing from people whose friends and family are telling them to move on and get over it.
It's been 2 months. It's been a month. It's been however long. Everyone puts our grief on a timeline. And it's interesting. People say to me, how long is my wife going to grieve? How long is my mom going to grieve? My sister, my brother? And I always say, how long's a person going to be dead? Because if they're going to be dead a long time, you're going to grieve a long time. Now, that doesn't mean we will always grieve with pain. But the only way To heal grief is to feel grief. There just is no way around that. And I think we live in a world that just knows how to, give you, and look, I'm a fixer. You give me any problem, Rose, I got three solutions for you. Until we get to grief, and then there's no fixing because you're not broken. You're in grief. And people, out of their love for us, want to stop the pain without understanding we have to go through it. If I can go back for a moment, we were talking about why is this world like this? I teach people what our great grandparents knew, how to be with the dying. My first book, The Needs of the Dying, is around dying, how to be with the dying, then how to grieve. Our great grandparents did this every day, but death eventually left the home and moved into the hospital, and grief left the home and went into the funeral parlor. And I remind people, even there was a day where your loved ones would be laid out in the front room. And if you have a house built before the 40s, a lot of people in the Bay Area have those amazing houses that were built before the 40s. They have wide doors for the casket to come in. And the person was laid out in your front parlor. And then, with all the changes in our modern society and sort of sanitized the world, what happened is the parlor left our house and became the funeral parlor. And it was told to us our front room should not be a room to display the dead. It shouldn't be a dying room. It should be a living room. We actually have a living room because we're trying to desanitize this world of death.
How, so can you elaborate on this? When did this happen? How did this all happen? How did it change so drastically?
I think it became with hospitals appearing after the war, especially in California. California has so many hospitals, but across the world, hospitals became the place where you went when you were sick and where you went to die. Before that, death was in our home. And so, with the change of hospitals everywhere, that's where you died, no longer in the home. And once it moved into the hospitals, we lost our experience of what death looks like up close. The other thing that's fascinating is I'm old enough when my parents were taking me to school, I would sometimes be in the back seat and we'd be on the way to school. I was maybe in elementary school, and there would be a hearse in front of us. And we would have to wait because the hearse was going down the street very slowly. I remind people, we don't see hearses on our streets anymore. Now the dead move among the city in white unmarked vans. The next time you're behind a white van with no windows, you're behind a modern day hearse. So think about how much death has been removed from our world. And then it comes to us, and we have no resources or experience.
Do you find, David, given that you're part of 26 grief groups, there are in the United States very different experiences depending on your culture and your background? And then do you find that it's very different in other countries? Is the United States unique?
I think Western worlds have really sanitized the experience of death. I think there's a lot of other cultures. I mean, when you go to India, you can see, funeral processions, you can see a body being burned and cremated, where all that is very hidden in Western cultures. So I think that's a difference. And the other thing to think about how we grieve depends on a few things. As you mentioned, our culture. Do you have a culture that says, be happy they're in a better place? Do you have a culture that says, be productive, don't wallow? And then, How religiously were we taught? What did our clergy teach us about grief and loss? And then how did our parents model it for us? I mean, I had two experiences in my childhood. My mother got a phone call one day. She answered it. She heard her mother had died. She burst into tears, fell to the floor. My father picked her up, hung up the phone, never mentioned again. Then I watched Gilligan's Island and I saw, oh, they thought Mr. Howell was dead. That's what a funeral looks like. I mean, that was my grief education right there. And most of us have stories like that. No one taught us how to do this event that's going to come to 100% of us.
Wow.
And then we just pathologize it now.
Yeah, David, when you brought up the living room example, you just reminded me when we had to call hospice. I moved in with my dad after he was diagnosed for several months to deal with the appointments and the chemo and the radiation. And there's just so much involved in it. I mean, it's a full-time job. And then we called hospice on the day before Thanksgiving. And my partner, my brother, and I moved in with my dad. And we slept on a mattress at the foot of his bed in the living room for 5 weeks to care for him 24/7. And you just brought that image back of the bed and the living room. And I keep thinking a lot about the difference between a sudden death, because there was a horrific act of gun violence while we were taking care of my dad. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, those people left home, maybe said, I love you, maybe sent a text, and boom, they're gone. And with us, this was a 7 month, really devastating journey. He was in so much pain. But again, my dad was so funny and laughing, laughing until the end. And then I thought about that plane crash that just happened in DC. Sudden death. You weren't even able to say goodbye. What are your thoughts on what do you hear from people about the differences between those sudden deaths? You had no idea it was going to happen. And a situation like mine, where in the beginning, of course, we were hoping, we didn't even think that it was going to happen so fast. But then once you call hospice, you know it's coming. But even in the back of your mind, I'm thinking, well, Jimmy Carter, he spent 2 years on hospice. Not that I wanted my dad to be in pain for 2 years, of course. But it's like, one more month, please. What can you just talk about the differences and experiences?
Sure. And it's interesting. It's a busy day in my world. So you have picked an interesting day that, as you mentioned, not only do I have a free talk later on the death of a parent, this evening there's another talk on what sudden death and collective grief is like. Because we're also, like you said, between the plane crashes and the fire, I was asked to do that. So that's a link I just sent in the chat that maybe you can also post for people. That's at 6 p.m. tonight. So when we talk about sudden death, like you said, you were able, your mind, your psyche was able to take time and wrap around this concept of we're going to have to say goodbye to him. And what you were experiencing is what's called anticipatory grief. Anticipatory grief is the grief before the death. Now, how do we deal with someone was here for breakfast and gone for lunch? Then when we have that sudden death, and even, just to open this up for everyone, grief is also not always a death, like the loss of homes and all those things are losses too that folks deal with. I always say, grief is a change you didn't want. So, when we talk about a sudden death, the shock, the numbness, there's a longer period. The grief is much more stretched out in those ways. People often go into a state of disbelief because literally their psyche can't believe it. Can't believe it. Our friends go on planes. We go on planes. No one disappears. And yet, some people were here and then suddenly gone. It's hard for our mind to comprehend that, and it takes much, much longer.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, I'm so grateful to be joined by David Kessler, one of the world's most incredible grief experts. I knew about David's work, but because I haven't experienced this level of loss, I've not read one of his books. But a few weeks after my dad passed, I went to the Book Passage in Corte Madera, and thank you, Book Passage, for your amazing grief section. And I found his book, Finding Meaning: The Sixth Stage of Grief. And the book and is just filled with so many words of wisdom. David has done amazing work. He has worked with thousands of people on the edge of life and death. Maybe you're familiar with his work. If you have a question for David, we would love to hear from you. Or if you would like to share your story about loss, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and I am back after a 2-month break. Again, huge thanks to Malihe Razazan for keeping the show running smoothly. She has put in so much extra work over the past 2 months and deserves a very long vacation. Thank you, Malihe. I also want to thank Angie Coiro and Ethan Elkind for doing a great job hosting the show and for being so flexible. They'll continue filling in as I ease back. I'm not really ready to do hard news yet. I actually have not been following the news for 2 months, if you can believe it, and I'm just not ready yet. So Ethan's going to be hosting on Mondays and Fridays for the next couple of weeks. So because I'm dealing with this really intense loss, I wanted to talk about it. I feel like we don't talk enough about grief in our society. And how lucky we are to have David Kessler on today's show, who is a leading expert on grief and loss. He has written 6 books. I picked up his book, Finding Meaning: The Sixth Stage of Grief, a few weeks after the passing of my dad. He's also the founder of grief.com. He hosts so many free lectures, one today at 3 p.m. when a parent dies. And then, David, can you tell us about the other lecture that's happening today?
Sure. The other one is going to be at 6 p.m.
6
Pacific,
p.m.
and that is around sudden loss and collective grief. So, we're going to talk a lot about the LA fires, but there's also people who have had a loved one suddenly die. There's also just a lot of collective grief in the air that we're going to discuss. So we're just going to dive into those two topics. And the first one can be found at lossofaparent.com. And the second one is at grief.com/tragedy.
You've got your own incredible story, which I'd love for you to share in a few minutes. But I wonder, how do you continue to do this work, running 26 grief groups, and then in one day, you're talking about losing a parent and then sudden loss and collective grief? How do you personally process all of this?
Well, today is a busy day and was the result of poor planning. But to be honest and vulnerable about that, so I try to space things out. I don't always succeed. It's a strange thing. We think, and you may have learned this, and you learned this in the moments with your father when there was laughter. People think grief. And one of the big things I do is train therapists, and they often think about this, like sessions should be about the pain and everything should be going into the pain. We actually process grief in the healthiest way by touching the pain and taking a break, touching the pain and having a distraction. In my own life, I have to really purposely, aggressively build in fun things to do. I have to make sure I do that to keep doing this. So, I think people are often surprised. I mean, one of the things I'm going to be doing is I'm just going to be taking an improv class. Why? Just because I need to do something different and have fun. So it's sort of doing those kind of things. And just when you had like laughter in the room, that helped you process what was happening.
Before we talk about the loss of your son, can you tell us the story about how you got involved in this work in the first place? And tell us about that day when you ended up at the magic shop.
You know, I had a mother who was in and out of the hospital many, many times. And you know, I just thought mothers were ill at times. And then she had to go to the big city at one point. And when she went to the big city hospital, because she was really sick, we were at a hotel. And one day, and by the way, I couldn't visit her because you had to be 14 and I was 13. So, you know, just even think about that, that, you know, families, especially back then, were seen as an interruption of the healing process. So here we were at a hotel, and someone one day started yelling, fire. Everyone evacuated. We went out to the front of the hotel. On the 18th floor, there was all these flames coming out. The fire trucks pulled up. It all looked very exciting at first. And then, as the fire trucks pulled up and started to extend the ladder, shooting began. They realized it was an active shooter. It went on for hours, and it was one of our first mass shootings here in the US. So, in the span of, you know, a few days, I saw police and first responders and hotel guests killed, and then eventually got back to the hospital. And a couple of days later, my mother died with us being downstairs instead of being with her. And I came away from all that so traumatized. You know, this was real traumatic grief. And I thought I was just going to be broken. I thought this was going to be life. And then one day I was able, and I even dropped out of high school. And I went back, and I had a wonderful neighbor in Sacramento that told me, you know, there's a thing you can do called the GED, and you can challenge, and you're smart. Maybe you can, you know. So I took my GED. Then I went to community college, and they had a class there on death and dying. And I heard about this woman, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who wrote these stages of dying. And I realized, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one. And there's a language. There's a language for this. So it changed everything. And all of a sudden, you know, I found this path, and I was really trying to help people and trying to learn and try to get healing for myself. And it really began to change everything. And then I eventually went into end-of-life care and hospice. And this became my life's work. And, you know, did the seven books you, six books you mentioned, and I actually just did a new workbook for finding meaning too. So I just added that. I want to send you one, and I want to send the bookstore one too. And happy to give it away to one of the callers too, if someone calls in. And you know, after all these decades of doing books and writing and helping people, Rose, I thought all my grief was behind me. And that turned out not to be the case. So 8 years ago, my younger son, I got a call that he had died unexpectedly. And it was as brutal as one would expect. And being a grief expert may have helped a little, but not a lot. I was a father more than the grief expert. So, you know, I always remind people, I come to this work personally and professionally. And I try, I think one of the things happens is some people think pain is a permanent state. And I like to be evidence for them that no matter what you've been through, happiness and joy are possible again.
Well, I have to say, when I read your book, and in the introduction, you talk about losing David. And I think it's so important for someone like you who talks about grief more than probably anyone or most, despite all of that knowledge, despite all the work that you've done. Your world was upended by the sudden death of your son, and of course it would be. But it was just so interesting to read about your process. And you write that you decided to also go through Kubler-Ross's stages and allow them to unfold as slowly as you needed. So can you
Yeah.
talk more about that and why that's so important?
Sure. So the stages, as people may remember, are denial. I can't believe they died. Anger. I'm angry that they died. Bargaining is the what ifs, if onlys, all the guilt. Then depression is the sadness and acceptance. And I always hear Kubler-Ross's voice whispering in my ear, tell him the stages aren't linear. You can't neaten up grief. You can't make it tidy. Grief is a very messy process. You can do all five stages in 1 hour. And, after he died, I had to like take my own medicine, Rose. I had to go to a grief counselor. I had to, go to a grief group. And literally, I sat in a grief group 5 feet from a table with books on them, my books. And I couldn't tell anyone in the grief group, that's me, I'm that guy. I had to be the father that buried a child. And so I had to really give myself permission to go through this. In the time, grief doesn't need a lot of time, but it needs dedicated time. And so I really went through this and I would go, yep, I'm in denial. I can't believe this is happening. Yep, I'm angry. Yes, I'm bargaining. Yep, there's the sadness. Wait, acceptance. Wait, acceptance can't be it. Wait, I'm just going to accept this and be done? No, there needed to be more. And that's when I started researching this idea of meaning. That, and when people hear meaning, the first thing they think is meaning. There's no meaning in a parent's death, a child's death, a murder, COVID, fires. There's no meaning in those. And I go, you're right. There's no meaning in the horrible event. Meaning is in us, it's what we do afterwards. It's who we become afterwards. And I knew for me that my son loved my work. He was so proud of me. I knew that his death could constrict my work or expand it, depending on the meaning I was to find. And so that became the sixth stage, and I'm so honored that the Kubler-Ross family and foundation gave me permission to add a sixth stage to her iconic stages.
It's beautiful. And in your book, Finding Meaning, you write that you were not sure you would ever write again, lecture again, or even want to live again. You write that you canceled everything for 6 weeks, but then you felt you needed to get back to work. You write, I needed to be of service and keep my own pain moving. As hard as my son's death was, I still wanted to live in the face of devastating loss. I knew that David would want me to live fully. David, I feel so lucky to be able to tell you. That line also really affected me. And I thought, I think I'm ready to go back on the air again. Maybe not talk about these intense political issues for a while, but just to be real and have these conversations because We're all going through something.
And I want to invite you to something when you're ready. Grief grounds you. I have to tell you, if I was to say I want to hear the political issues of the day from someone who's never had a loss or someone who's been through grief, I'd rather hear them from someone who's a little grounded and has been through grief. So when you're ready, just know it's going to be important that you do talk about them.
Oh, that's so beautiful. We have a number of callers on the line. I'm so sorry. I apologize for not getting to callers earlier. Let's go through a few and then we'll get David Kessler to respond. Today we're speaking with David Kessler, author of many books, including Finding Meaning, The Sixth Stage of Grief. And thank you all so much for holding. Let's go to Dinah in San Rafael. Hi, Dinah. Thanks for holding.
Yes, hi. My situation is definitely a traumatic grief, and I just learned the term a couple of weeks ago. My mother, her name was Donita, she collapsed and died at home, and I was living at home because I literally had just finished 16 months of 16 months of mercury detoxification within myself. I was misdiagnosed for 45 years, and I just finished the detox. And 4 days later, I heard sounds downstairs. I came downstairs to investigate, and I found my mom collapsed, and she died within the hour. And my brain was still not fully recovered from all that mercury that had moved through it, let alone the rest of my body. And so for me, this was extremely intense because also she hired someone to handle her estate, who ended up completely ignoring that. Not only was I grieving and in traumatic grief and in shock, but that I also was coming out of an extreme illness that nearly killed me. And then I lost my home, which was my mom's home, because my mom also had not made the changes to her will and trust that she had planned to. And in fact, by saying her name, I am on the air. I have just potentially put myself in a situation if that person who's managed her estate and still has some of the funds still to provide to me and other people, I am in danger of retaliation. She already has retaliated,
Dinah,
and she, yeah.
can I jump in here? You are going through so much. Are you getting some support? Are you getting some help?
My health insurance, because I had to go on Medi-Cal because I wasn't able to work anymore because my cognitive capacities were so slowed down during the mercury, as it
Right.
accumulated every day for
So
my
are you
estate.
able to
So
get help, Dinah?
I haven't gotten help. The best help I got just recently was going to the acupuncture school in Berkeley and getting acupuncture and Chinese herbs because my health insurance has dropped the ball. I've been asking for support for over 2.5 years, so I do need a grief group. And I've moved twice under duress and ended up in places where I feel very isolated.
So,
So I've also
Dinah,
been dealing with that.
here's what's really important is to get support. You
Yeah.
can either go to your local hospital and see if they have a grief group. A social worker there has a list of referrals. You live in an area that has tons of grief centers. My grief group's available. You really need to get support. You really need that. Do that for yourself, okay, Dinah? Because you have been through so much and you deserve.
Thank you for that, David. Dinah, I'm so sorry to hear about your mom, and thank you for sharing your story. We will put links on our website. And again, grief.com. David has so many resources on his site. And I hope you can tune in for the next few days. We're going to be talking with Dr. Deborah Umberson about losing a parent tomorrow. And then on Thursday, Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor is out with a book called The Grieving Body: How the Stress of Loss Can Be an Opportunity for Healing and What It Does to Our Body. So I hope you can tune in for these shows. And then there are many resources on David's website, grief.com. Thank you again for calling in. Let's go next to John in Berkeley. Hi, John. Thank you for holding.
Hello. David, thank you. And Rose, thank you. And David, I'm sorry for the loss of your son. And Rose, I'm sorry for the loss of your father.
Thank you.
My father, I had the same experience. And I was there as he died. And we had to decide to turn off and the machines. And he died. He was incapacitated, and the kind of person that would hate that. And then the same thing happened with his wife, my stepmother, and I was there when she died. And so I know what it's like. And what I feel now is the death of democracy. It's the same thing. I'm in deep grief of the fascist takeover of America. And I'm sorry to put in politics, but I feel the same way about our country. Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much, John. Sorry to hear about your experience, and thank you so much for sharing it. David, what are your thoughts about John's comments around losing two people he was so close to, and then what he said about losing democracy? There's a lot of grief taking place in this country right now.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things when we talk about grief and loss and meaning, what's so helpful is finding some action to take. And it's fascinating. I've been doing this for enough decades now that this is a shocking thing to say, but you know, every 4 to 8 years, part of this country is in grief around who the president is. And so there's always grief there. Now, I'm sure people would say this is different. And one of the things that I have found that's so helpful with all griefs in our life is to get support and take action. So, you know, for John, I think the dilemma would be trying to convince everyone of his stance, but rather going, let me believe what I believe, whatever he believes politically, and then see what action he can take personally to change it. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel helps the most in all of those situations, is to feel like you're doing something,
right,
instead of being disempowered.
Well, thank you again, John, for sharing your story. And I hope you can tune in for the additional shows we do about grief tomorrow and Thursday. We've got so many emails. I don't have time for all of them, but I will share them tomorrow and Thursday. David, a lot of people are writing in about losing their parents, about dealing with loss. One of our listeners said, we all have or will experience loss and grief. A few people said that they wish that there was more of a focus on how to process grief, and then also finding purpose being included in grief therapy, especially for caregivers. What are your thoughts on that? And we have just about 2 minutes left.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I never wanted to do a workbook. I always thought I was a writer, and people would hear me and others talk about doing grief work, and people go, well, what is the process? What is the grief work? So that's why I finally wrote the new book that's out. That's the Finding Meaning Workbook. It's available everywhere. And to really, it takes people through that process. Now, it's a very slow, guided, gentle process, and it helps people go at their own pace. So that's one resource. The other thing is, grief is a process that if you just go to the grief group, you become in the process. If you go to a grief counselor, you're in the process. And a lot of people don't even need outside support, and we just need to feel the grief. That's one of the biggest things, is just feel the grief. So that's, I hope, helpful. And I also want to just say, those two events that we have, the death of a parent tonight, I mean, this afternoon at lossofaparent.com, and then the sudden death one, collective grief, that's at 6 p.m. tonight. Both of them are recorded for people who register. So if you're like, gosh, I wish I could hear that, it's recorded. We're going to send you a copy of it if you miss it.
Really incredible resources. Again, The Loss of a Parent is taking place at 3 p.m. today. And then there is another program around sudden loss and collective grief at 6 p.m. today. Any final words you'd like to leave with us, David, in our remaining
minute? I'm just so impressed that you're doing this and you're really turning your pain into purpose and you're really finding meaning in so many ways. And I love you're doing the shows. Mary Frances O'Connor, who's amazing, you've got coming up. Her and I are going to be doing a free event too. Tune into her when she comes on your show here. She's really amazing. And I just say, we all naturally run from the pain of grief. But if I've learned anything, it's this. What we run from pursues us, and what we face transforms us.
So beautiful. David Kessler has worked with thousands of people on the edge of life and death and has written 6 books on grief and loss, including Finding Meaning, The Sixth Stage of Grief, and 2 in collaboration with the renowned psychiatrist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who originated the theory of the 5 stages of grief. Find more information about David's incredible work at grief.com. I'm so grateful, David, to you for all of your amazing work. Thank you for joining us today, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you. And if anyone wants to find me on social media, I'm under I Am David Kessler.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rose. Thanks.
Thank you. And thank you for all of your really nice emails. I didn't get to read them all today, but we will tomorrow and on Thursday. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.
KALW is hosting a series of live free events every Tuesday to reflect on how the world is changing in 2025. It's called the Bay Agenda. We're bringing Bay Area youth leaders together to learn about the ways they will shape policy and politics through civic and community engagement. It's a youth power listening event in downtown San Francisco today at 5 o'clock. Learn more at kalw.org.
Support for KLW comes from awesome listeners. Thank you this hour to Stephen Upjohn of San Francisco, as well as to Terry Butler of Oakland and to Tara Seiler of Oakland as well. Thank you all for your support of KALW. Join them and join us online anytime. Go to kalw.org and click donate. And thank you.